Hello, this is Scott Welf, and I am here today in Houston, Texas. We just finished lunch, and I'm with Walter Blaney. Hello, Walter.
It's good to be here. I've known you a long time, Scott. It's anytime you want an interview, just holler.
All right, we will see you. And there goes Jeff Williams. We just are having him in for a lecture here. We just finished lunch, and Jeff was with us, and Bill Palmer and Richard Hatch and John Starr and a bunch of other guys were here joining us. Had a nice lunch. Tim Drake was down from Canada. So Tim's building. What is it? He's building?
Building an illusion that he invented and in the workshop of Dan Summers, who lives about a mile from me in Kingwood.
Yeah.
And Dan is now building my ladder levitations, and he has a nice workshop. And he's got compressed, instant babe, foul play, half a dozen really good illusions of his that he's
of his own creations, yeah.
But then he also makes other illusions, and he makes my ladder levitation. Better than I make it.
Better than you.
And mine was pretty good.
And you stopped making them then altogether, isn't that right?
Right. And I've got someone else, ProCraft is building my suspension 3001, and Bill Schmelk with Wellington Enterprises is building my lighted sword cabinet, or the Great Escape, I call it. And I still make my hoops.
Yeah. You do? You still make the hoops yourself?
Yes.
Okay.
Because they're so difficult.
Oh, yeah. They have to be within millimeters to work perfectly. Yeah. I know. Well, I wanted to talk with you today a little bit about exposure and about the World Alliance of Magicians, the coming and going of that. Let's talk first of all just about exposure and what. And right now we're seeing a lot of that on the internet. I mean, it used to be that it was in print, or then it got to be on the radio or on television, or going back like, of course, to the discovery of witchcraft when Reginald Scott had first exposed that, I guess, in the book and explaining that this isn't witchcraft, it is just sleight of hand and trickery and whatnot, so that could have been considered exposure. My question is then to you, Walter, what do you consider to be exposure in magic?
Okay, the main reason first before that, why we don't want to give away the secrets to the audience that we're trying to entertain, is when I was a kid, for a dime, for 10 cents, I sent off to Johnson & Johnson and got a little envelope with the card trick, which is the two-card Monty. And you get a double back card and a double face card, and you hold them a certain way, and you twist as they turn over, and you take the face up one behind your back, turn it over, and you ask them what the other one is, and of course it's wrong. You say, no, I took that behind my back. Let's do it again. You do that several times. And I remember one kid I showed it to just went crazy, just like, oh my gosh, that's magic. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Tell me how you do it. How do you do it? And I said, no, magicians can't tell the secret. Well, Walter, we're friends. Come on. Tell me. That's a fantastic trick. I got to know. I won't tell anybody else and everything. So I made the mistake. I said, well, see the trick cards. There's a double back and a double foot. And the guy says, oh, for crying out loud. What a stupid trick. Boy, a second ago I was king, and now I'm
just like that.
I want to crawl under the ground,
Right.
So I learned very early on why you don't give away the secret. And then a lot of secrets are relatively simple compared to, if you're making something float on a thread and you see the thread, there's no magic. But if you don't see it and don't know it's there, it's wonderful magic. And so when Valentino came along on Fox News or Fox Network.
Yeah,
not Fox News, Fox Network. And they started those, what's the magician? Masked magician shows.
Yeah.
Well, it was pretty much of a, it hurt everybody. And so they had one show, and they had gave away the zigzag and another dozen really good illusions. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, what right do they have to take the life legacy of Robert Harbin, a wonderful guy, a wonderful inventor in magic, and take his life legacy and give it away to the public and ruin it?
Right.
Okay, but some magicians will say, but people won't remember that. Well, they don't think about it, but they'll go see a magic show, and they'll see Andre Cole roll out the zigzag, and then their mind starts thinking and working. Oh, yeah, I remember I saw the guy said, she twists in the box. I remember how she does that now. Well, they are reminded, and therefore it's spoiled. And so
they've eroded a little bit of their innocence, basically.
Andre, for that purpose, he put the zigzag back in his show. It wasn't in his show right at the moment. And it just didn't go over. I mean, people were saying, I know that one.
Yeah.
And so he took it back out of the show. But at any rate, I digress. They had that first show. Did I just clear my throat? Oh, the car started.
The car started.
Okay.
Up with
it. Okay.
Start the car.
I thought I was a ventriloquist as well. Anyhow, the first show, we just heard about it. We started promoting it a week before, and then we saw the first show. Oh, my gosh, it was just awful, and everybody was upset. And so then we figured, okay, that's done. It's done. There's nothing we can do. And then a week or so later, we heard they had a second show coming up. Oh, my gosh, a second show. And the first show had 24 million people that watched it. And the second show had 20 million people that watched it. So, boy, we got, and then we heard there was a third show coming up. So a dozen of us got together at the Magic Castle. And I'm talking about myself and David Sandy and Chuck Jones and Marvin Roy and Francis Willard and Mark Wilson and more or less a dozen of the top magicians out there.
Right.
And we said, what can we do? So we'd already found out that we can hire a public relations expert in the entertainment field. And so we got this one guy, and he wanted $12,000. Well, Andre Cole and I each put up $6,000 and paid him the $12,000, and he started this campaign 3 weeks before that next third show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then the money that would come in after we formed this association would pay us back first, and then that's what happened.
And the campaign was what? The campaign that he developed.
Well, okay, what we did, we decided to call it the World Alliance of Magicians. And it would, that's WAM, or W-A-M.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of being the IBM or the SAM doing this to fight against the Fox Network and everything, I thought it would be better to have every major organization magic in the world.
Sure.
The Magic Circle, the New Zealand Magic Group, South Africa Magic Group, and Mexico. And anyway, we got about 20 of the top associations in every country to go under our letterhead. And then we decided the best way to do this is to write the corporate executives, the CEO, and their advertising agent and the advertising company that they use, and explain to them in a simple, nice, friendly way. And this is what we did. We said, we understand you probably are not aware of what you're doing, and that's understandable, but we just want you to think with us a moment. You're not only taking away the bread of the magician that's trying to pay the bills and feed his family, you're hurting the magicians. More importantly, you're taking away the fun, the excitement, the wonder of magic. And for goodness sakes, there's little enough real magic in the world left any rate.
Right.
And people want to be entertained. They want to be fooled. And you're taking that away. It's like if you're a comedian and you give away the punchline before he gets to tell the joke, you've spoiled the joke. And you're spoil sport.
Right.
And so that's what's happening here. He said, so we suggested there are some legitimate shows of magic with top professional magicians that are really entertaining with some wonderful magic. And we would love for you to consider sponsoring those shows and not sponsoring this other show. And they all said, my gosh, that's so obvious. I mean, we didn't know. We just give our money to the advertising agency, and they put it around here and there. But we'll keep our sponsorship out of that show. But that was a few months after that third show. 3 weeks of our first work through the publicity campaign nationwide that magicians are upset about this and why, that third show got 8 million people to watch it. And we got accused of advertising the show, spreading the word, making more people watch.
Mm-hmm.
The last time I checked, 24 million and 20 million is a whole lot bigger than 8 million.
That's right.
So it went down to 8 million.
Wow, really,
and
fell
then,
off quickly.
Then we heard the fourth show was coming on, and that's when we wrote the letters to all the CEOs. And to a person, almost all of them
the CEOs wrote back, of the advertisers.
Yeah, the advertisers and the CEOs said, oh, gosh, that makes sense. We don't want to hurt anybody, so we'll
put
our money
into
the commercial shows, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about ABC Corporation and DEF Corporation and XYZ Corporation. I'm talking about Coca-Cola, Robitussin, they pull their ads, Kellogg's, my memory, there are about a dozen of them that withdrew their ads, big companies like that. And there were, on that fourth show, there were only three national commercials and Pepsi was one of them, but not Coca-Cola and not all these others. So and then they had to fill the show with ads promoting other Fox Network shows. Hmm. And they were very unhappy with the situation.
And that was the fourth episode.
That was the fourth, yeah.
Okay.
So we had done our job, and we helped a lot. And then they had a fifth show, which was on close-up.
I remember
they gave
that.
Away the cigarette through the quarter and all.
Right.
Now, all of a sudden, our close-up magician friends started hollering. They didn't pay much attention about all
That's
the illusions
right.
being destroyed. But now, hey, what are you going to do? What are you going to do?
Yeah.
But at any rate, by then, it got such a low rating that that was over with.
Now, how'd they do as far as the rating for Nielsen's on the fourth show? You said they were like at 8 million on the third show.
I can't remember. It was right around the same. Third and the fourth show was right around the same. But Fox didn't have all their big sponsors, and they made no money on the show. And so that fifth show, I don't think they made any money either.
Mm-hmm.
And
so they decided
so
to
then
get
they
rid
stopped.
Of it. Yeah.
And so the two main tenets that I think are important in the magic world, and they're in the covenants are in all our constitutions. IBM, SEM, all have in there. Don't give away the secrets to the general public.
Right.
You know, and the other one is don't steal from the creators, because we want them to keep creating magic.
Correct.
You take away and rip off what they're doing, and then they don't care to come up with new ideas, and it hurts magic. So we switched to the latter of the two after that, and went after the ripoff artists.
Because I know that there were people who were ripping off your ladder levitation in foreign countries as well.
Yeah, I don't mind naming names. It was Dominic Magic in Palermo, Sicily, Italy. And a guy named Francesco Martorana, on his website, he had about 15 of the top ripoff illusions, you know,
origami,
all of Jim Steinmeier's stuff.
Yep.
Origami
interlude
and the pole levitation, my ladder levitation, and on and on. You know?
Right.
And so magicians often don't agree on everything, but I got 200 of the top magicians of the world to sign on to an open letter to Martorana to stop and desist.
Mm-hmm.
What you're doing is totally unfair. It's hurtful to magic. It's hurtful to all the creators of magic. We want them to keep creating. You take away the desire to create if you're just going to steal it away from them.
And that was kind of near the end of when Wham more or less closed its doors.
Right. Yeah, and I was spending so much of my time for 5 years, and my money.
And your money, not getting anything back.
David Sandy was a director, and Kevin Spencer, and Francis Willard was the secretary, and Chuck Jones was the treasurer. And we five
I was vice president.
Mostly did that. Then it changed to where you came along.
Yep.
And Ab Dixon came along as president. You were vice president near the end.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, it had been gone. It was so much work, and we were doing it all. We got stuff done, but it was just too much. I just said, I've got to get back to doing other things.
And without a driving force like you behind it, it just kind of wheels fell off.
We just said, close it down.
Yeah.
And what little money in the treasury that we had left, part of it was ours, we gave to the Collectors Association,
mm-hmm.
their SAM's, what do you call it? Not the,
what the endowment the, fund.
Yeah.
Is that right?
For the Hall of Fame.
Okay, yeah. SAM Hall of Fame,
Then it had the fire and it closed
down. That's right. That's right.
But that went to what it was.
Well, exposure still is going on, and people are still trying to fight that as best they can. And one of the new things, of course, that they didn't have so much back then when I think the Masked Magician was first out, the Internet was still in its infancy. And then now, of course, we're seeing with YouTube and podcasts different things where some people are considering there being more exposure, more tricks are being, shown for malicious reasons. I mean, just for the sake of giving it away.
Yeah.
Have you seen much of that?
Yeah, I just saw someone take Fantasio's Cane to Silk, Vanishing Cane. And apparently they had one guy that was, like, teaching you how to do it and how it worked and everything. And I don't think Fantasio put that on YouTube. I'm going to guess somebody else saw it, and they take it and they put it on YouTube to show it to everybody.
Hmm.
But I don't know for sure how that got on there. But, yeah, I've seen other people that are just for meanness, to say, I'm smart. I know how that works. Here's how it works. They haven't worked on it. They didn't have any creativity. They just
They used someone else's idea.
That belonged to somebody else just to be
and no respect
it.
For that necessarily
no
for the creators or the history of magic and appreciation certainly for that. Well, in that case, you mentioned that they were exposing and teaching the Fantasio cane. So that if they're teaching something like that, I mean, where do you draw the line between teaching and just pure exposure?
Well, kind of backing up a little bit, like at my age, when I was a kid and I fell in love with magic, the library was where you went. I took the streetcar in Dallas, downtown to Dallas, at the library.
And that was free.
And they had about 20 books on conjuring, on magic.
Right.
And I would check out four or five and keep them a week or two and turn them in and get another four or five till I read them all cover to cover.
Yeah.
And that was just great. Now, that's not exposure. That was what got me further interested in magic. But I had to make that effort and spend the money to get on a streetcar and go downtown and check the books out and do all that.
Well,
I
made
an effort. Or if I bought a book at a bookstore on magic, I had to spend the $15 or $20 or now $30 or $40 to buy a book. Mm-hmm. That means I'm more than just idly curious, like the kid that's wanted to know how the two-card money work.
Yes.
They're just more than idly curious. They really like it. They'd like to learn.
So you had an investment of time.
Yeah. And once you have to invest, but see, the masked magician thing, you didn't have to invest any money or time or effort or anything. You just turn on the television because they're going to give you all these secrets tonight. And they...
Likewise, though, on the Internet, anybody can surf the Internet, and, you know, with the television, I think you can stumble across something just by, you know, surfing, unless you are actually doing a search, using a search engine to try to find how a magic trick is done. I don't think you'll stumble across magic secrets, you know, as easily, unless you're actually going out and Googling, you know, a magic trick or whatever. I mean, so you have to have some sort of an interest, I would think, in that.
Yeah, and that's to be encouraged. Mm-hmm. I mean, we need new young magicians coming along.
Certainly.
If there's no encouragement for the younger guys and gals.
And there are a lot of people here today who are saying that they have gotten interested in magic through certain things they have learned that we may consider exposure on the Internet, you know, but they're saying, hey, you know, I kind of, now I see how that's done and I think I can do that. And so they've gotten interested and then they will kind of find their way into that.
Right.
Yes, some have said that exposure is bad and that's the wrong way for people to come in. They should be paying something more than just their time. They should be having maybe password protected so that way that there is an even, you know, harder level to try to reach that. They shouldn't just stumble across, you know, things.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I think when they don't have any more than that idle curiosity, they'll look at a few things one night, maybe two nights, and then they're tired.
Let's move on. Sure.
Yeah, they're going to other things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just like when we were kids growing up. I mean, there was Boy Scouting, there was swimming, tennis, all kinds of things you could do. We got the magic bug bit, and we were in the magic.
Yeah.
And we couldn't understand hardly how other friends couldn't be also this interested in magic.
Yeah, of course.
You know, but they're just not. The magic bug didn't bite them. They could care less how a trick worked.
Right.
And believe me, there's a lot of wonderful people today that said, you know, I watched you saw that lady in half. I watched you float her in the air. I don't want to know how it works. Don't tell me. And I said, believe me, I'm not going to tell you. And
I think
really don't want to know.
One of the funnier stories, you've got so many of them, and I'm looking forward to your book coming out sometime in the future, but there was a story you told me once about after a show was over, and you had done this ladder suspension for a group of engineers, and the guy came and said, I think I know how it's done. It was done with batteries.
Yeah.
You want to tell that story?
Well, yeah. Briefly, I was at the Marriott Hotel right here in Houston, and it was for the IEEE. That was the International Electrical and Electronic Engineers, IEEE.
Okay,
so everybody there is an electrical or electronic engineer, and their wives and all. Big banquet, you know, 1,500 people, and I did my act, wonderful audience, and then in the corner of the room, I have a 3-foot-high stage, 3 1-foot-high platforms of the hotel
talked
on each other, and the front three sides are draped in a set of stairs, and my prop, my ladder levitation is sitting on that little thing. So I'm over here centered in the thing, doing the whole show with audience contact, and then I'll say, now I'm going to get a lady from the audience, I'm going to float her in the air, and it happens to be the wife of the vice president, Mrs. Carol Jones. Let's give her a big hand. Welcome up here. And I'll talk to her a minute. And the music starts, and we'll walk over to this platform a little higher so everybody can see Carol floating in the air. So we walk up the stairs and I float her. And at the end, are we at the end?
Nope, I think we're still going.
Okay.
Let me make sure.
At the end, I can take my prop apart and put it back in the cases, which are behind the catty-cornered stage there. So I see a guy kind of with his arms folded standing nearby, and I'm still taking it apart, putting it up. He walks over and finally says, well, you've got a good trick there, son, but I got you figured out. And I said, oh, congratulations. Very few people figure that out. How'd you figure it out? Well, I'm an electrical engineer. Oh, my goodness. I said, well, how can I fool you? There were 1,500 of them there.
Yeah.
How can I fool you? And so I said, do you think I'm using AC or DC? He said, well, I assume AC. And I said, now, I've just finished the show. I haven't left this little stage. You can look around here, look behind there, and everything. Do you see any electrical cords anywhere? No. You mean you're using DC? I said, right. How many 12-volt car batteries in series hooked together would you think it would take to hold a 120-pound lady in the air about 2.5 feet above the you-know-what?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, I guess a bunch. I said, well, if you would like, I don't usually do this, I'll let you look behind the thing. And so he kneels down, bends down, and looks in that top third of the platform.
Yeah.
And no batteries there. He goes a little lower, looks down in that middle one. Damn, no batteries there. And he lies down on the floor and looks underneath the bottom platform. And he's the hell, there's no batteries here. I said, you think I might have you fooled? Said, I guess so. I said, but let me tell you, I'm not putting you down. That fools magicians. It fools the space scientists. It fools people all over the world. I happen to come up with an idea for a trick that fools magicians and scientists and electrical engineers.
Yeah.
But I'm just delighted that you were interested enough to come over and chat with me and that you cared enough to try to figure it out,
right.
And the stuff you guys do electrically and electronically, that's real magic to me. See, I have no idea how you do your magic.
Right.
And I made him feel good.
Sure.
Which, and you know, and I was interested. He was a nice guy. But he just couldn't figure that he had guessed wrong.
Which reminds me of that story you told me about also after that you had performed for the astronauts in the Apollo mission, I believe, and in The Right Stuff in the movie, at the end of the movie where they were all like in the Astrodome and they were watching a show. I think they finished like with a fan dancer or something. It was a big celebration. In reality, that you were part of the real show in performing for the astronauts and for the public at that show. And then later, when they had a time to get together with their friends, I'm sorry, the doctors and their spouses for a more intimate dinner, that you were the one that they had invited back.
Yeah, well, it was the when NASA moved to Houston and first started with Gil Ruth was in charge of it. Oh, they had a big Texas barbecue at the Coliseum, and 4,000 VIPs were there at this noon barbecue, and I'm right out in the middle, surrounded, and I do my regular banquet act, no levitation or anything, just my banquet act. And I was the first entertainer that all the astronauts and the space scientists saw.
Right.
And I did my Texas act, so it fit right in. And one of my all-time great audiences,
yeah.
4,000 people. Okay. And so then I went down to NASA, and there was a special showing. Now I had my ladder levitation. I did it for them. And they're all fooled, all the space scientists. And I remember Borman and Lovell and Stafford and about three or four other astronauts said, hell, they no such thing as an anti-gravity board. And Stafford said, but Blaney has one. Damned if he doesn't. You know, it was like that.
Yeah.
So and I floated in the air. Mike Collins' wife, Pat Collins, was mm-hmm. the girl to float. So at any rate, then 25 years later, I get a call from Commander Alan Shepard. And he says that the original seven Mercury astronauts, you know, which were the Right Stuff guys,
yeah.
are all getting together on our 25th anniversary. And I said, holy cow, was that 25 years ago when you
time
saw
flies,
me?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he said, yeah, what would you charge to come? And I said, you couldn't pay me. I will even turn down a professional date. You guys are my heroes. It would be such an honor to do the show. So there were just like 18 there, just the astronauts and their wives. Gus Grissom had died in that fire,
yeah.
but his wife Betty was there, and they all sat. I've got on my living room wall a big picture signed by the six original Mercury astronauts and by Betty Grissom, Gus Grissom's wife, as
yeah.
I said. And so that was a thrill to do that show. But then, and I did the levitation. I floated Maria Carpenter, Scott Carpenter's wife.
Yeah.
And they're just 6 feet away. It's just a little intimate, you know, three round tables of six each.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just right there. And, of course, I did my act, all the funny stuff and everything. Pulled the shirt off of one of them and just did all this stuff, you know. And so then they said, look, you're our buddy. You're our family. If you don't have another show or something you have to run to, we want you to stay at our party and just be part of our family. And I said, sure. So I got to talk to each of them individually, and it was a real thrill. And John Glenn loved The Vanishing Birdcage. And, you know, I can repeat it over and over and over and over. So he'd come over and say, where is that? Can you do the bird? He could hardly talk. And I said, you mean where I take a little birdcage like this one here and go poof and it disappears? He said, oh, my God. Oh, my God. And he walked away. And then he came back again. He said, could I see it one more time?
And like a little
then
kid.
I saw him coming, I would have it already open up. And the second you said that, I said, you mean like this? Oh, he went, oh, blah, 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 blah. And that went on about 15 times, and he just couldn't get enough of it. And I said, but you know, you're enthralled with this one little old trick that I do.
Yeah.
But what you did, you flew around the moon, and landed on everything. Talk about magic. I said, my gosh, you are my heroes and everything, but I'm glad my little trick entertained you, John. But,
and then you have another picture hanging on your wall that was from somewhat Neil Armstrong, was it? That was
And then Alan Shepard, and he's on the moon, and he says, "Walter, this is really magic."
Yeah, it's signed that way.
Signed that way.
Very cool.
That's a thrill.
Yeah, certainly.
These guys were all
heroes of the world.
Yeah,
certainly. The original pioneers, and certainly creative. Well, we spent some time here. I appreciate the time that you've given me over here to discuss your opinions on exposure and kind of some of the background.
Well, wait, I've got about 100 more anecdotes.
I know. We're going
to
need to sit back.
My book. All these stories will be in my book.
Yeah, and how is that coming, by the way? When do you expect that will be sent to the printer?
I'm about a third of the way through.
Okay.
And I've got a big file, a thick file. I haven't gotten to the file with all these notes as I go along.
Yeah.
I stop and write a 3x5 card, a note, and just throw that in the file.
I know you always carry notepads and a pen with you to jot down notes all the time.
Yeah.
As long as I've known you.
But at any rate, one of these days, I'll get
looking forward to that. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Walter, again, for your time. Always a pleasure, my best friend.
When I get to talk to you, it's always a pleasure, my friend.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. We'll be buddies for life.
That's absolutely. And so that's all there is for right now from Houston. This is Scotty out.
Now, don't push the wrong button.